This is The Rounds Table.
All good things must come to an end, and so it is with our first season as your inaugural host on The Rounds Table. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in yet another week. We have a very special episode for you this week. We're going to do a best of the 2016-2017 Rounds Table season. And I am honored to be joined by my producer, Emily Hughes, and our new editor, Emilio Garcia Flores, who are sitting right next to me to take us through these best of articles. 10 articles lined up. Let's get right to it. First one, the Fourier trial, evolucumab and clinical outcomes in patients with cardiovascular disease in the New England Journal of Medicine. Your typical patient that you might see to apply this evidence to is a 60-year-old gentleman who comes in and has known coronary artery disease. He's on reasonably good medical therapy, including a high-dose statin. This trial was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial that treated patients with evolucumab, a PCSK9 inhibitor, at 140 milligrams subcutaneously every 2 weeks or 420 milligrams monthly. And they looked at a primary outcome of a composite of cardiovascular events over approximately a two-year period. There were over 25,000 patients included in the trial, and they primarily found that evolucumab decreased cardiovascular events in patients with established coronary artery disease who were already on high-dose statins. Your absolute risk reduction was about 2%, and your number needed to treat over a two-year period was approximately 74. The main limitation of this study was that it was an event-driven study, which are known to exaggerate or occasionally limit benefits, but probably the short follow-up was the biggest limitation, which we know can exaggerate benefits in some instances.
Coming in second place, we have a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine titled The Prevalence of Pulmonary Embolism Among Patients Hospitalized for Syncope. This was a study that applied to patients that presented with their first episode of syncope that might be tachypneic, tachycardic, and with signs of DVT. This, again, was a multi-centered cross-sectional study, and their exposure was to stratify patients into a likely or unlikely category using the Well score and the D-dimer results. Those that were in the likely category went on to have a CT pulmonary angiogram or a VQ scan. So the bottom line was that in patients admitted for their first episode of syncope, a pulmonary embolism was identified in 17% of individuals, including 13% of individuals who had an alternative explanation for their syncope. And some of the limitations were that the denominator did not include those that were discharged.
And for a homegrown pitch from the University of Toronto, Dr. Amol Verma, who is our faculty mentor at the Rounds Table here, published a research letter in the JAMA Internal Medicine very recently from his Gemini database that questioned the findings of the PZIT study, because in their cohort of general internal medicine patients who were admitted for syncope, they only found an incidence of 1.7% of those with pulmonary embolism. So we still haven't reached clinical equipoise when it comes to the prevalence of syncope and the approach to its diagnosis in patients admitted with syncope. Coming in at third was a research study published in JAMA in 2016 that looked at the effects of escitalopram on all-cause mortality and hospitalization in patients with heart failure and depression, so-called the MOOD-HF trial. Patients in this trial were typically a 62-year-old gentleman who had an underlying ischemic cardiomyopathy with NYHA class 3 to 4 heart failure symptoms, who was on appropriate chronic heart failure therapy, but had been hospitalized in the past year for heart failure with moderate depression and no cognitive impairment. This trial was a multi-center, double-blind, outpatient randomized control trial that randomized patients to either between 10 and 20 milligrams of escitalopram versus placebo and followed them for approximately 18 months. Their primary outcome was a composite of all-cause death or hospitalization. They looked at just over 350 patients, and ultimately they found in patients who had heart failure with reduced